Okay, so we'll have staff cover our next item, which is going to be item 20, Healthy Watersheds.
There, how's that? I'm Karen Worcester, and I manage our regional monitoring and assessment activities at the board here, in particular the Central Coast Ambient Monitoring Program. Thank you. I'm Karen Worcester with the Central Coast Ambient Monitoring Program. And before I start, I haven't had an opportunity to talk about our program to several of the newer board members, so I just wanted to, I'm happy to be here, and I want to briefly point out Mary Hamilton in the very back, who has managed our CCAMP monitoring activities almost since its inception, and Dave Paradis, who's done all of our software design, and I'll be talking a bit more about him in a minute. So thank you all for an opportunity to talk about a project that has been engaging us for a couple years now. And it is a web-based project to develop a report card for healthy watersheds. This project has really been getting a lot of attention, almost unsolicited. We gave an early presentation at a national conference in May, and since then have had multiple requests to give presentations on this effort. EPA headquarters, their water quality assessment framework project, the Healthy Watersheds Project, have asked for WebEx presentations. We've been up to before the Water Quality Monitoring Council, which is an interagency resources agency, CalEPA, collaborative to improve monitoring in California. Have met twice now at the state board, and we'll be going up again in a couple of weeks to meet with John Bishop to talk some more about this project. And I will touch more on this at the very end as to sort of what we're striving for in those meetings. Earlier this week, we had a really great, very technical discussion with members of the Southern California Coastal Water Research Project and about half of the Public Works Department for Orange County about our report card, because they are doing a similar effort that has no web component, but they're very interested in, you know, are there ways they could collaborate, et cetera. And actually, we'll be meeting with John McHugh, who's here in the audience from Santa Clara County, after our presentation today. So that's the energy around it's very exciting, and I think it speaks to a need that we have had in sort of our web environment, is to better ways to use the internet to display information. So how did our water board make a project of this nature happen? And there are three really key ways, and I would like to, again, point out Dave Paradis here, who has worked really tirelessly on behalf of the CCAMP program since its inception, and really has, you know, so much to give in terms of his talents with software development. So I really appreciate the work he's done on this project. Second is the CCAMP endowment, which has allowed us to provide him with some compensation for his efforts, and has enabled the program to weather so many challenges, financial challenges, staffing challenges over the years. So we're very grateful of that endowment. It has really made our program strong. And then finally, just the latitude to do work on this project myself. I appreciate that. So when we build our web tools, we really are usually doing it from a practical application standpoint. What kinds of questions are we trying to answer on a daily basis with our data? We have a lot of data that we've collected over the last 15 years, and so how do we make that data available to answer questions? And that's really what's driven our web design. We call it the wouldn't it be cool if school of web design, where we tell Dave that it would be really cool if dots turned color or had arrows or whatever, and he makes it happen. But the types of questions we're interested in: where is the problem and what is causing the problem? What land uses are associated with the problem? Where are our best places that need to be protected? Where are places, for example, we should put more grant money to enhance them? And are things getting better or worse? And where? And it's really hard to find a place online where you can answer those questions. And of course, any good assessment report can address those questions, but that's a static document. So the question is, can we do that with an online tool that updates as the data does? And I'm going to argue that we can and that we are well on our way to having that product completed. The product has been really, our vision project, the Healthy Watersheds Project, is really what got this effort started. We were tasked with addressing our three goals related to healthy aquatic habitat, proper land management, and clean groundwater. And the goals basically, in general, state that we want 80% to be healthy, and then in those areas that are not healthy, we want to see them improving. So that was the challenge that we took on in developing this project. So inherent in those goals, we need to characterize both status or health as well as change. And we have a lot of different types of data. So we've taken a multi-metric approach, using as many of the sources of data as we have available to us. That has included not only our own measured data, both from our program and other major monitoring programs in the area, including the ag program, as well as model data, in particular, there's several sources of model data, which I'll talk about. We're relying on a threshold-based scoring approach that is consistent throughout the vast majority of the measures we're scoring. And we're looking at both status and change at different scales. We're interested all the way down to the analyte and up to multimetric scales, as well as at the level of the site, the water body, and the watershed. So our general principles of software development were to really help the user answer where, why, and what's going on. We want our data to be from readily available online sources that we can update routinely. We want that data to be of documented quality. We wanted transparency of methods so you can find the information about how we did what we did on the website itself. We're taking a approach of drilling down for more information, so you start with a big picture overview and then you can drill in as far as you want to go to get more detail. And then a really great component of the project from my standpoint is that we've embedded a wiki, which is basically, it's invisible to the viewer, but it's a little text area that allows staff who are not web designers to update material. So you can come in and add staff comments about the data the viewer's looking at. So this is a, it doesn't show up very well with this lighting, but this is a view of the basic form of the web report card, which will be hopefully publicly available, I said this year, but I'm thinking more like the next 6 months. So what you see here is a, does this thing, there we go, I got a pointer. I don't know, can you see? It opens with a map of the region that's been color scored by watershed in a typical stoplight, color pattern. We'll be scoring aquatic life, watershed function, and human health. Actually, that'll be management, watershed management, and human health. Right now, these bars represent percent of sites that we've scored, but we'll be translating that into percent of area of the watershed, so you'll be able to see area of watershed. And each of these, basically, if you were to click on aquatic life, down here you would see a list of all of our hydrologic units. So, for example, if you were to click on Santa Cruz, first of all, these bar charts reflect the, in this case, again, the percent of sites and their health, but we'll be, as I said, translating that into percent area. So, for example, you can see in Santa Cruz, maybe 2/3, 3/4 of our sites are in very good condition, whereas down in the Salinas River, it's more like less than half of our sites. And as I mentioned, that's site counts. We've got a lot of sites in our worst quality areas right now. So Santa Cruz, if we were to click here, it brings up all of the water bodies in that area. And you can see most of them are in very good condition. We've got one standout here, which is Gazos Creek, which is that red site right there. This is all in the North Santa Cruz County area. And you can click on that, and it would take you to a list of sites. In this case, we only have one site at the lower end of that watershed. And clicking on the Gazos Creek site, you get the Gazos Creek site report card. And I'm not sure how well you can read this, but each of these boxes is a different sub-index. This is the overall aquatic life score. And then the various sub-indices that make up that score. And you can see in this case, we have a red score in organic chemicals. Clicking on that, it pulls up the list of chemicals that are involved in making up that score. And in this case, you can see that it's DDT that is high in that watershed. Why DDT is high in Gazos Creek watershed is a very good question. And it's something that we might want to explore further, and particular with, from my standpoint, I'm looking at sample count here. It was a single sample. So that would inform me that I need to go back and resample it to see what's going on up there. So what it did is it drew our eye very quickly into an area of concern and very quickly gave us some information we really didn't know about this site. In fact, it's something I learned about this site when I was reviewing the website. So I've found it to be an extremely helpful tool already in its currently unfinished state. So that tool will then link to our Data Navigator, which is a tool that we've had online since 2005. And we've been working on a major update to the CCAMP Data Navigator, which should be ready to release hopefully at the end of this month, very shortly, within the next week or so. That gives you access to the actual data, graphs of the data, some summary statistics of the data, trend analysis, and some other statistical tools. This is an example. This is nitrate data at San Simeon Creek, just below the spray fields there. You can see we have a little up-pointing arrow. That is our change icon, where we're seeing significant change. This is all statistically significant. You can see that's very apparent in the trend line here. This is starting at about 2000 or 2001 and through to the present. And one of the tools we've really upgraded is our trend analysis. In this case, these vertical lines are called a change point analysis, which shows us the point at which there's a high probability we saw some a change occur in this water body. And this is around 2006. And this has been the subject of quite a bit of interest and effort on the part of our TMDL staff reviewing this problem. At the bottom of the screen, there is also a summary of all of the other analytes and whether they are changing and in what direction. You can see at that site, there's quite a bit of increase in some of the various analytes that we measure there. Okay, I just want to talk just in a bit more detail about how this project, how it's configured. One of the really key components of this project is setting the thresholds around which we're doing the scoring. And that has been actually proved to be a far more challenging component of the project than I ever expected. That's partly because there are many different kinds of thresholds that say different things. Some of them are, for example, MCLs. There may be much lower levels for protection of cancer from a drinking water standpoint. So selecting those thresholds for the purposes of this project has been a really important piece. And in general, our principle for the project, because it's about healthy watersheds, is to select thresholds that tend to be protective. And an example of that would be, for example, in the toxicity world, you could select something that is a 50% toxicity level or a threshold 10% toxicity level. So we have tended towards the threshold effects levels. But the system does allow you to select different thresholds for different purposes, and in fact, the same software that is driving this project is also, we're looking to adapt that to help support the 303D listing process at the State Board. So you can set thresholds that are the listing thresholds and use that software for a completely different purpose. So we relied really heavily on the state's water quality goals database, which is developed by John Marshak. There's a number of other very key databases related to thresholds, but for some chemicals that are really sort of emerging as new chemicals of concern, we've had to go to the scientific literature for. And there are some chemicals that we just don't have thresholds for yet. We've developed a sort of a tiered selection approach, relying first on adopted standards, then recommended guidelines, and then going into the scientific literature. So, and in general, that we're following algorithms that were developed by John Marshak for his water quality goals database. What we've done that's a little different is we've developed a software-assisted threshold selection process, because we have a threshold list of about 6,000 chemical guidelines. So it's a challenge to be consistent and thoughtful and do that well for that large a list of analytes. And so the software has really aided us in that process. Right now, our threshold process, the algorithms have been peer-reviewed. We've received comments on those, and we're currently finalizing them. The scoring approach we're using has been adopted from Canada, their water quality index, which is well-respected and has been adopted for use, for example, by the United Nations. We are modifying it a bit to make sure it addresses our own project goals, and that was actually the subject of the Southern California workshop I mentioned earlier, because you know, when you modify something from the published literature, you really want to make sure that you have good justification for it. So we were discussing the reasons we modified it with that group and getting their comments on that. It follows, though, the report card paradigm, which is 5 grade scores, basically, excellent through very poor. And then we're also designating what we're calling blue water streams, A-plus streams, where something scores excellent across all categories. And we thought that hopefully that might be a tool for us to establish special protections for those streams at some point. There are a number of indices of health. Right now, we're working on the Human Health Index and the Aquatic Life Index, just two of the three components. Human health, we're looking at a drinking water component and a water contact component. And then we have several metrics within the Aquatic Life Index. One of them is conventional water quality, which would be measures like nutrients and turbidity and pH, pesticides and other organics, metals. Biostimulation is sort of a measure of its risk for eutrophication and from excessive algal growth, for instance. And then toxicity, chemical toxicity. Oops, I didn't mean to do that. Another one that we're working on, we have less, we have some data for, but less than we would like to have, is habitat-based. And we're working with Central Coast Wetlands Group to develop a linear riparian assessment approach that will use imagery of riparian corridors to help us get some handle on where we have problems with our riparian corridors. That will be in combination with a field component that we're hoping we can take on through our own monitoring activities. And then there's also a biological metric. Currently, we have data for benthic invertebrate biology and algae. The Southern California group, for instance, has expanded their report card program through working with U.S. Forest Service and have brought in things like amphibians and fish. So we're hoping that we can potentially adapt that for wider use at some point. I mentioned the Human Health Index. At this point, the sub-indices for that relate to nitrogen, salts, organic chemicals, and metals. And then we basically, so we score those sub-indices and then combine them into an overall score of health for each of those, for aquatic life and human health. The reason I'm saying there's different combining approaches here is because, for example, if we had a toxic chemical present in toxic amounts, a lot of these approaches use averages, we would be concerned to average out that signal. Say you have a list of 20 non-detects and one measurement that's quite high. We don't want to bury that signal because we're averaging. So we're taking different combining approaches to address that concern. Sure. Yes. So the different indices, for example, with conventional water quality, the various measures within that index are pretty related to each other. One affects another, you know, temperature and oxygen, for instance. And a straight average seems most appropriate for combining the scores for those terms. But for other indices, we are looking at other approaches. For example, worst score. So for example, in the case of DDT at Gazos Creek, like I showed you, we had one chemical there that was scoring poorly, but we don't think we should average in the scores for all the other chemicals and bury that signal for the overall index.
Okay, now I understand. Yeah, I was thinking consistency on why one method in one case and another method. Okay, clear. Thank you.
Let's see. I'm going to talk next about scoring change. And this is an important piece of our project, as you know, because of the way our goals are set up. And we have these, I think, really nice little icons on our website we've used for a number of years now to score change, basically the intent saying, this is going from poor to fair. And it's pretty intuitive and has been really effective on our website. So we are maintaining that icon in our new report card website. Oh, and it helps us address this latter part of our various vision goals related to exhibiting positive trends and key parameters. This is just a quick snapshot from our data navigator. You can see a lot of our icons are expressed as circles, and obviously those are our status sites, but where they're expressed as arrows, that's where we're seeing some kind of significant change. And you can see at some cases they are two-toned, meaning they're crossing some kind of a score boundary. We actually look at change. Sure. Sorry.
I'm seeing the middle one that's circled there.
This one.
So I'm reading that as it's going down, it's going from poor to good. That doesn't make sense.
You actually caught one of the things we have to change at our website. We used to express this as decreasing concentration. But it doesn't mesh well with this was when we just were expressing them as analytes. But now that we're rolling it together into indices, it doesn't make sense that going down means better. So we're going to flip the arrows. But it's actually, believe it or not, a whole lot of work because every single one of our little combinations of color icons need to get recolored and flipped. And so it's one of the things we have to change. And that was a really good catch on your part.
That reminds me of our old reverse polish calculators. Nowhere. You remember those days?
I do. You have to put the equal first.
Yeah.
That says something about our age, I think. Anyway, but that's a really good point because what's intuitive to a viewer? And if you're looking at concentration, you know, going down means it's getting better. But in fact, a lot of analytes, some analytes, for example, oxygen, going up means it's getting better. So it's just one of those little technical details that you need to address in building this kind of tool. And so we are going to flip all our arrows, which may make some of our routine users crazy for a little while, but I think it's the right thing to do. So in looking at change embedded in the Navigator, we're looking at it two ways, and I think this is really important, and I think it's just a great tool that we've added. This is an example of a linear change, where you're seeing something more or less moving in one direction over time. And we're using a particular type of analysis to show that. But what we find with our data is that not all change fits a straight line model like that. In fact, a lot of it doesn't. And this is a really good example. You can see it looks like things were going up for a while, and then all of a sudden there's really kind of a dramatic shift, and they're moving downward. And in fact, when you do a change point analysis on that data, you see it defines a point in time that it detects a probable change. And in fact, this is when a treatment plant upgrade went online in 2007 on Chero Creek. So you wouldn't expect that to be a slow linear change. And a lot of the things that we do in our management have this kind of effect. It's all more like a switch. So we wanted to shift from sort of the trend paradigm to sort of more of a change. And that's really what those arrows support very well, because that change point gives us a point in time, and then we score the two sides of the change point separately, and that's how we get the two different colors of the arrow. What we're working on right now is, I mentioned earlier, this idea of moving from site-level scoring to area scoring, because we want to know what percent of our watersheds. We don't want to know what percent of our sites. And so the way we're approaching that, in our monitoring program, we tend to sample at the bottoms of tributaries and along the main stem. And we tend to sample on a monthly basis. We're very data rich, but we tend to be in the lower ends of our streams and rivers. In most places, not everywhere, but in many places. And this is really typical. This is the Pajaro watershed. And you can see here the greenish, they don't look green on your screen, but these are green areas or agriculture. And these grayish areas are urban. And you can see most of our sampling sites tend to be down in those areas where there's a lot of land uses. And that's, of course, where we see more problems. It's where we have more things we need to fix. And so it's very useful for us, and from the standpoint of what we do with our data, to have this sampling design. But it also means we don't have as much data from these upper watershed areas that are typically on private land. It may be range land. It may be a very small stream that doesn't have a road near it. It may be inaccessible. So this is pretty typical of, you know, how site distribution would look. But sometimes we will have randomly selected sites periodically in these upper areas. So in this case, what we're using is that we're using our measured data in areas where we have it, and we're overlaying that on top of model data that just came out of California just conducted a healthy watersheds assessment of their own using sort of very large statewide data layers. So we're combining that model data with our own measured data. Our measured data will improve the findings significantly, but will be supported by that underlying data from the California effort. And this is that an example of that model data. This happens to be their watershed condition index, but they've done a compilation. I think they have over 176 different data layers that they've made available through this effort, which has given us quite a wealth of information to pull from in terms of this project. And I just wanted to point out that what we're basically doing is we're applying the scoring at a given site using a hydraulic stream network that allows us to translate the scores up the stream network. So basically, the score will apply upstream until we hit another site that might modify the score or a major shift in land use. And so that's basically how that area, that change from sites to areas will take place. So our next steps are a public release of the Data Navigator with its new tools. We've drafted a methods manual that will be going through peer review in a month or so through the SWAMP program. and will be finalized, and we would like to put together a publication out of that methods manual for at least one of the components, the scoring method. And then we'll have a public release of phase one of the Healthy Watersheds Project, which will be primarily the aquatic life piece. Like I said, I think it's going to need about 6 months. Phase two will be move groundwater data from GeoTracker into our human health goal. So that's going to be, we've been primarily a surface water program to date, so that'll be a new chapter for us to pull groundwater into this system. And addressing the goal two related to watershed management, which will involve pulling together both information we have on sort of watershed stressors like pesticide applications or where our impervious surfaces are, along with metrics of management, for example, from the ag programs, reporting and so forth. The software has all been developed in an open source environment, and we consider it available for use by others, at least once it's finished. We have provided the data navigator to the Moss Landing Regional Data Center as part of a grant project. So they have data navigators now to attach to their data delivery system. And the idea there is to help people who deliver data to basically to the California Environmental Data Network, Data Exchange Network, sorry, to give them a tool to look at their data. The state board meetings have evolved around, they're very interested in adopting the data navigator component to attach to the CDIN database. So that's the big statewide data compilation of surface water data. So we will be, that's why I mentioned we'd be meeting with John Bishop, and he's interested in understanding how transferable it is, you know, what kind of resources they would need to do that. Yes? CDIN, California Environmental Data Exchange Network.
That, and that's called CDIN?
CDIN, yes.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah. It's had its ups and downs, but. I did say it first, but I didn't translate it for
board
you.
Board members, there'll be a test at the end, okay?
And then the report card piece, which is more interpretive, the Water Quality Monitoring Council is quite interested in. They have work groups. I don't know if you've ever had a chance to look at the My Water Quality website, and it has web portals for different questions like, is it safe to swim? Is it safe to eat the fish? That kind of thing. And the structure of that group is they basically get, you know, interagency groups to adopt one of those portals and develop a website for it. And they're, the Healthy Streams work group has basically proposed that they adopt our report card approach for their Healthy Streams component. It would, you know, it obviously would have to go through some adaptations for their purposes, but they're really interested in the approach we're taking. So that's been really gratifying. And I think more importantly from our standpoint is that we want this to be sustainable and maintainable. The code is complex. A lot of the data, I would say the data management is happening at the state board now, you know, at the state level. And so I think it's really in our best interests as a region to share these tools and get them supported where we have, you know, IT staff that can maintain them over time. So I think it would be well worth developing these partnerships in the future. And this is the result of my little snafu. I was supposed to have an ending slide here. I'm sorry. I had a problem with my PowerPoint at the break, and this is the wrong version. So imagine a question mark here, or you could ask me questions.
So, well, we can use our imagination.
You can. I can. The slide's down here. Actually, this goes into a long discussion of the the underlying software framework, which mm-hmm. I don't think we really want to talk about in detail. But Dave's here to answer any questions about it you might have.
Well, you know, firstly, I got to say I'm very impressed with the work you have done, all of you, and because there is a massive amount of information there that's crunched into, you know, some user-friendly graphics. And so I'm sort of imagining, you know, the behind the scene of all the information. So I think that's a great job. But one thing that I guess I'm intrigued, it looked like you have been able to develop in-house a lot of the softwares and managing the data. My understanding, and you alluded to it, is we had some IT capability here that has been moved to Sacramento. And then we here as a water board and all of you staff have had need for some software assistance to help aggregate some information. And my understanding from state board is like, well, we don't want to have all those little specialty requests from the regional boards. We're going to be focusing our IT efforts on the bigger things. And examples that, you know, have taken place in the past, currently, I'll give you a nice little example, the winery discharge test results that I have to done on a regular basis. That's all done manually. So we're getting pulp and paper information. And I asked one time, why can't we do this thing online, you know? And we don't have the software, we don't have the capability. Another one, which is, I think, very current, is the ag order. You know, there's a lot of information coming, and there's gonna be, as we're talking already about, well, the next step. What I would say before the next step is, what are we doing with the data, okay? Because some folks are gonna say, what are you doing with all the information? Are you just becoming a collection agency? There's a lot of good information and we're very limited in resource, you know, on how to use the data. I remember sitting here looking at GeoTrack presentation. I forgot the name of a person who came, and it blew my mind, the capability of the software. So the long and the short, look like you have done it sort of independently here on your own. And is there any way some of these software, and you mentioned, hey, it's open for everybody to use, is there any relatively painless way to use these software you have developed for analytes that and metrics that could be applied to some of our other programs?
I think so, and I think in the second phase of the project, we'll be exploring that further in terms when we get into management. That goal too is really more about watershed management.
Yeah.
So I think that we will be exploring what's available to us at that point. I agree with you with your comment that we have so many different ways of receiving data, and it's so hard to, for example, get it all from one place. And in fact, we're putting together a project proposal to submit for some discretionary funds related to that concern, that we'd really like to have a place, you know, more opportunity to get access to data from a single location.
You know, this ties, I think, very well to our next item, which is going to be strategic planning, where last year, where we had a discussion, and I know with Michael Thomas, he said, well, I took his thunder away. I said, well, sounds like we need to work smarter and not harder because of, you know, less resource, people resource available, and then being able to use more of some of these tools to get the data and us to and staff to be able to make good use out of it. So anyway, that was one item. The other one is on the Gazos Creek, DDT. It sounds like the level is pretty high, and
it's about twice the threshold we're using. Like I said, we're using a lower threshold. It's a threshold effects, but it was about twice. But it's a single sample. You know, it could be there's some illegal pot growing going on up in that watershed, for instance? I mean, it is kind of an unusual place to see DDT.
Because where I'm getting at is, I mean, does it warrant having warning signs, you know,
because of
subsistence fishing or activities like that?
No, I would not say in this case.
Okay.
No.
All right. Then your threshold selection, you use the Canadian standard, so sounds like this is a North American standard, although you mentioned that the United Nations has adopted it. Now, I know that the EU has done a lot of work, too, in developing some thresholds. Is that something you had a chance to peek at? And I see a nodding in the back.
Yes, but I want to make sure that I'm clear that we are using some Canadian thresholds, but our thresholds are primarily from EPA and California. It's the scoring approach that they're using that we've adapted for our purposes. And that approach is being used in a number of other locations in California, elsewhere in the country, and yes, Dave has been all over the internet looking at other approaches as well. But yeah, primarily we've used the scoring formulas that they've adopted.
Got it. Yeah. Then my last quick question is, you mentioned that we had a California-wide model, and then you overlaid that over the local model that you had. So how consistent were the results? It sounds like, you know, the state had done its own review,
right,
and then we did our own. And so was there a good correlation?
Well, that is something we haven't finished ours entirely. We're still making sure the scoring is correct. But once we do that, and once we start overlaying the two, we're working on that spatial piece right now. That's going to be a question, I think, that will be of great interest, is how well did that state assessment represent the areas that we know more about? So that should help inform, not trust in those. Those data layers they're very broadly scaled. So, some of them are better than others. Some of them are developed from measured data. Some of them are completely modeled. So,
But that's a nice triangulation of the data.
Yeah, I think so. For example, I mentioned we have the randomly selected upper watershed sites. So that would be a good place to get up into those areas that we might be assuming are all high quality and really see how the actual data compares. So that's something that's sort of on our list to do as we finish the project.
Well, thank you.
Thanks.
Just to clarify a couple things, because I don't want incorrect information to be in the record or to people take the wrong impression. I want to talk about, you mentioned we used to have IT staff here. So the control agencies decided that if you were an IT staff, you had to be under IT professionals. So the first thing that happened a couple year and a half ago is all the regional board IT staff were moved under, we had 6 tents, which was Gary, he was part-time, and that was all moved under DIT, Division of Information Technology. That was the first thing that happened. Secondly, when Gary retired, they took that 6 tents and brought it back to Sacramento. Gary was not part of the creative arm of IT here at the region. He managed the computers and the network and that kind of stuff. Secondly, I want to say that DIT, since he's left, has put an amazing amount of effort into ensuring the integrity and the reliability of our IT here where Gary was, and staff are thrilled with what has happened since this change. We've gotten like 25 new laptop computers that we've pushed out to staff. They came in and gave us all new printers to ensure reliability. They replaced every printer. And they come down once a month, every 6 weeks, to work on things. And in addition, the technology has changed such that what you used to have to do here, they can do remotely from Sacramento now. So I don't want you to leave with the impression that we've lost something recently. We've actually gained a lot with the recent changes.
But that's the operation and maintenance side of IT.
That's correct. But we never had any other IT, and that's why when you made that comment, unless Karen corrects me. The IT that we had here was not creative. It was infrastructure,
right.
Supporting infrastructure. That's all we ever had here.
Like I mentioned, this is because we have the CCAMP endowment, and we've been able to.
But when we developed the notice of intent online, who did that?
The notice of intent?
For the ag order.
Well, GeoTracker was already existing. It was, and Angela's back there. Angela can come up and talk about it. But it was really using an existing tool to make that work, being creative on Angela and staff's part to make that happen. And the other aspect of of the way IT happens in the state, it's very cumbersome. It's very difficult. And the state board has a very limited budget for IT solutions. And in fact, I'll give you an example. When I was doing the TMDL program, we had $4.5 million in discretionary funds just for that one program. Now, Michael and the other AEOs, I think you have $4.5 million total for the entire state in terms of discretionary, and they have to decide whether some of that money goes towards IT projects or if it goes towards monitoring for TMDLs. So the landscape in terms of financing has changed substantially since the mid-2000s. So it's quite a bit different. We're very limited these days.
Well, that's going against the flow of the, you know, the industry. That's the non-regulatory industry, as I describe it. You know, if you look at companies, you know, Fortune 500s and public and privately held corporation, the big emphasis is using IT as the main tool to try to offset, you know, the challenges associated with labor cost, you know, manpower, and recruitment. And in fact, San Luis Obispo is certainly right now becoming a recipient of that, with so many IT companies popping around here, hiring a lot of Cal Poly students. I know this is kind of a little infringed, but my point is, you know, we're as a water board, we're not this little island in the world. And, you know, looking on the outside, to me, it's kind of counter to the flow. I don't know if
well,
you see
it's not,
it that way.
So I'll expand on my explanation. But DIT and the programs have implemented, we do a lot of, there have been on the stormwater program, on the MPDS program, a lot of that has been automated, where a lot of the, all the stormwater applications now are all done online. And we have electronic self-monitoring for the MPDS programs now, and all that's been developed. So there's been a substantial amount of automation that has been developed, but it's been focused on the existing major IT programs that we have for the major programs. And given the budget and the staffing, there is a limit to what Sacramento can continue to support in terms of programmers and, you know, keeping things up and running.
Okay.
So don't get the wrong impression. They have done.
All right.
I mean, there's a lot we could do if we had the resources to do it. But given the resources, I think DIT has done really a pretty good job.
Okay. And, you know, I apologize if it's sidetracked a bit, but since, you know, we're moving also on the topic of our strategic plan, I thought to kind of take a little bit of a synergy of what your presentation was in other applications. So thanks, and sorry for taking the mic this long.
Can I just add that the reason that Karen told you about the outreach and the discussion she's been having with other partners is because the outcome of that has been a lot of interest and support to use what Karen and Dave have created, as well as to support it into the future with whatever technology and software. That's not all secured at the moment, but that's where we're headed.
Can you tell me where the Moss Landing data center is physically?
Physically, it's next to Phil's. No.
It's next to Phil's?
It's that little
I thought I was
going
to say inside the whole enchilada or something.
Yeah, it's a small green building just down the street, farther beyond Phil's.
Oh, so it's on the island itself.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
And who's maintaining that?
Well, it's a small shop. Well, there's several different offices in that building. The remnants of the State Mussel Watch program are there. The So the field teams that have supported the swamp program are there. And then Rusty Ferry leads the data management group there. And they have supported the swamp program in the past for data management and other activities. But we've had some big changes in our monitoring staffing recently where basically we aren't able to contract anymore to entities that are doing work state employees can do. So a lot of the funding that was going there is now, I think we have 12 new positions at the state board, so they're moving all the data management and quality assurance activities out of that shop at Moss Landing. Maybe not all of them, but maybe all of them. We don't know yet. Certainly the bulk of them to the state board. So it's going to be a very interesting and difficult time, I think, in terms of moving it and making sure it all works well for us. So, but that's the direction it's going in. You know, everyone's working hard at it. So,
Mr. Jordan.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So, a great presentation and a great product. I agree with the chair's admonition or challenge that this is the way of the future. What's especially gratifying to me is that the end product both gets a wonk like Chair Wolf to sit up and ask questions about statistics and look at the mean and the average and that kind of stuff. But at the same time, it shows me photos and pictures and finally just a simple little report card. Because I think that's always, you know, in 3 years, that's been one of my impressions of is the challenge of a building full of engineers translating both policy and outreach to non-engineers, to normal people in what's a regulatory environment. And
normal people?
Normal people.
Did you hear that?
Yeah. So, and I think you're definitely on the right road to accomplishing both of those in a manner that gives, you know, the scientific guy a chance to grind down through the various screens and get all the info they want, but at the same time gives somebody that just wants to know, is it green or it's red? A quick answer, right. And if they want to know more, how to get there. Only question I had is I don't even know if it's material, and that's you know, the future. Now is the future. We'll see continued pressure on treated wastewater to be reused for various purposes, whether all the way to drinking water or just for some type of reuse. And the issue there of not incorporating, up till now, not really incorporating testing or data for contaminants of emerging concern. So your hormones and pharmaceuticals. Mm-hmm. Is that going to be an issue in watersheds like this? And if so, can just those type of tests be incorporated pretty easily and moved into this type of format also?
There, the challenge is this threshold approach. If you can't designate a level at which you were worrying about it,
right. It's
hard to incorporate. But, you know, we may be able to find some. For example, if the threshold is detection, that's used in some cases. If I'm finding any, it's a problem. But, you know, that's a good question because they're making chemicals a lot faster than
right.
We can measure them, develop lab methodologies for detecting them, determine what to do about them.
Okay, thanks.
So it's a challenge.
Yep.
And
all right.
Thank you.
Otherwise, just great presentation. Looking forward into the year, huh?
Yes.
Okay. Cross your fingers.
But you know,
fiscal year.
supplement. Federal. You know, your comment. I think one of the other issues is not only looking at the compounds as individuals, but the combination effects, mm-hmm. and that's
synergisms.
That's where it's getting a lot more challenging.
Yeah. Some of the pesticides are definitely additive in terms of their toxicity. And one way you could potentially address that is maybe using a total sum as one of the elements. But yes, that is a challenge, and we have not directly addressed that yet.
Mr. Johnston.
Nice presentation. So my first question is I understand the benefit to us if we develop this tool and we get other people to support it down the road,
I guess my question is there, you know, we've really invested some, well, it looks like, from the C-Camp endowment in this. Is there a way to get some revenue back into the C-Camp endowment from others' adoption of it? Serious question.
That's a good question. Dave always threatens to put a little PayPal button on our website, but I'm not sure how well that would work. But I it's a good question because at this point, that's not how we had viewed it. We had viewed getting support from other entities that way. For example, there was a new nonprofit forming in Moss Landing that sort of was evolving out of the data center there. And we were talking to them about supporting our tool sort of in exchange for the software that they could use to, for example, help in other states. Because we've actually had Oregon, Arizona, a couple other states call us about it.
Yeah, I'm just wondering so, because if we're getting short-term support in exchange for long-term use, you know, it might be worth looking at mm-hmm. if there's licensing arrangements we can make with other states, et cetera, so that we can continue to have the resources to work on this. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, getting somebody's support for a few years while they use this software and help other states figure out how to use it, and then the software is out there and it's being used, but the support isn't there anymore. Mm-hmm. Is you know we yeah. need to look for the long term.
That's valid. It's a good idea.
Does the state?
I think there's a question in terms of use of public funds to develop something that you can't necessarily. It stays open source. It gets tricky.
I'm sure it does get tricky.
You could argue it's been, although my time has been involved. Any funds that have gone into it have come from the endowment.
From the endowment, right?
To help compensate Dave's time.
I just know that it's a pretty good prediction that 5 years from now, we're going to be struggling at least as much with funding as we are right now, and that we're going to be continuing to try to develop our tools. So if there, I understand it's a tricky proposition, but if there's a way to do it, I think we should be seriously exploring it. Secondly, I may have missed the nutrient stuff on there. I'm sure you're measuring for nutrients and scoring for nutrients.
Yeah, actually, they were a little embedded. There's one place where we're using them as part of a model. We're scoring some directly in the conventional analytes metric, but in the biostimulation metric, there's a statewide model developed as part of it's called the nutrient numeric endpoints, if you're familiar with those. And there's a tool, basically, that we've used them in some TMDL development, for instance. You input nutrients, nitrogen, phosphorus, some other measures, and it predicts biomass, algal biomass, oxygen deficit. So the predictive terms.
So, but we are mm-hmm. using values for phosphorus and phosphates as well as nitrogen mm-hmm. and nitrates.
Yeah.
Then that's okay, because we focus so much on nitrates. But I'm learning, looking at the blue-green algae stuff, that sometimes phosphates are the principal driver.
One of the challenges in our region is that where we have areas of Miocene formation, Monterey Shale, we have phosphorus levels that are, you know, double what we would like to see in pristine streams, but that's what those streams, that's what they are. That's what is natural for those streams. Of course, in a good conditioned stream, there's not also a nitrate input to cause an algal bloom. So, you know, for example, Coon Creek in Montaña de Oro is one of the highest scoring in terms of our bioassessment streams around, but it's very high in phosphorus. So it's interesting because we can't just employ a single number with those streams and have it make much sense.
And when you have high phosphorus mm-hmm. soil, when you get sedimentation, you bump up your phosphates in the stream,
mm-hmm. right?
Because it's in the soil.
Which is one reason we use those model terms, because they combine both nitrogen and phosphorus together and predict an output, so that it takes into the account whether there's like basically no nitrate in the stream, but there's a lot of phosphorus. it's not going to be a high risk for eutrophication.
So I see on the website that, the report card will be out summer of 2014.
He broke his arm. I'm blaming it on him.
That's kind of hard when you're programming. But if at some point you have a beta system that a beta setup running that we can look at, I'd love to get a link.
Great, and hopefully that'll happen soon. And I would like to also at some point report back what percent of our watersheds are healthy to you, hopefully in not too distant future. So.
Thank you for this wonderful work.
Thank you.
Well, don't overlook me. I'm sitting here.
Uh-oh.
Hello.
Oh.
You're not done.
Well,
sorry.
No, we kept the best for last.
Oh, yeah, of course. Thank you. So, thank you. And I've seen CCAMP develop from many different angles, both out in the community using the information, the early information that was coming forward when I was working with the Morro Bay National Story Program. And I know that some of us realize your long-standing work, but for newer board members, both Karen and Dave were the first co-directors of the Morro Bay National Story Program, which was a tremendous accomplishment in gaining that federal designation. But the CCAMP program itself has just been endlessly bountiful. But, you know, the RCDs, every organization that's working on any kind of resource environmental restoration, habitat protection, whatever wildlife issues, you know, this database has just been critical to the work that's going on. So this is wonderful to see a new development. One of the things that interested me in hearing these different components that you're now going to be able to integrate or at least link, and in the Human Health Index, you mentioned, you know, right now people can go up and look at My Water Quality Portal and they can check out their local stream or their favorite place that they like to be. You know, in my work with environmental justice and looking at DACs, disadvantaged communities, one area I think that we have before us, which is becoming more apparent to me, is in connecting the knowledge that we have, the understanding we have, we can show these hotspots, we can look at the surrounding areas, look at well, you know, water well use for drinking water and so forth. One big gap, if you look at it in a community context, is how do we get that information then to health providers? Because I think in those locations, typically those communities are served by clinics or other low-income types of medical services. And I'm pretty certain, I can't say it for sure, but in my experience, especially working in Salinas, the community organizations that serve, for example, the housing needs and linked to that, you know, clinic needs, they tend to focus on certain kinds of health issues, diabetes, obesity, other kinds of things that are associated with poverty. But the idea, I will tell you how many times I got asked, you know, why are you working on water quality and what does that do? Except for Chular, where the school finally had to have bottled water. It finally started to surface that the water quality issue could be health impact related. And I'm hoping with Angela and John Robertson, Matt Keeling, that we can find some connections to open this type of data and the Human Health Index, start to link that into their understanding and recognition of typical symptoms that occur with nitrate contaminated water usage, long term especially. So I just want to put that on the map, not like Dave, and you don't have plenty of things to worry about on pulling this together, but I would like to work with John Robinson and Angela in our efforts to in outreach and education to the EJ, to our EJ partners, and then in looking at the clinics and starting to communicate with the health network in these areas, especially in the disadvantaged community, networks. That would be something I think we could elevate pretty easily once your database is functioning, you know, up and running and accessible. So if Angela and I could follow up on that and work with you on that, that would be outstanding.
Yeah, I know in a different realm, I mean, it has been used, for example, I know of RCDs who've taken computers in the field and showed growers, for instance, data from their area. So I know it's been used in that kind of interactive environment, but it is a question of connecting the people who need it to the resource, and that can be really challenging.
Well, and connecting it to those people and then kind of fostering and encouraging that interpretation then on the other side, like what do the symptoms look like, and creating a profile so that, because those networks, those health networks are typically underfunded, understaffed. But if you created a profile of what does nitrogen impact look like in elderly or children, I mean, we know blue baby syndrome, that's the stereotype for the problem. But there are many other problems associated with long-term use of contaminated water, arsenic and other heavy metals, as you pointed out, some of the other organics. I just want it on the map, and I'll work to help make that happen, and through my various networks, and I hope to connect these kinds of concepts. They're still concepts, I get that. But anyway, I'm just putting that out there. Thank you.
But, you know, a question that I have for the staff, well, for one thing, I think this is very similar to, the nitrate groundwater monitoring and flag out for contaminated wells. So there is similarity in terms of, okay, you got the information, how to use it for notification. But on the health effects of contaminated water, is this something that the California Public Health Department works on? And or is that something that now the new drinking water division works on? And I'm looking at, the more I learn about the state, the more I'm having a hard time keeping track of all the little boxes, trying to put an org chart is an impossibility. So to prevent duplication of efforts or maybe just information already being available, is that something that's out there? Does California Public Health Department address issues of
they do health
effects
so
of water?
It's anybody else can certainly chime in. So the new Division of Drinking Water, so they're responsible for point of use, making sure the systems disinfect, they are always, all that kind of stuff. They also do the MCLs. That part came over with the Division of Drinking Water. But I think if you're looking at epidemiological studies and those kinds of things, I think that stayed with the Department of Public Health. We just got a piece related to water that came over.
Okay, so since they're one of the agencies within the umbrella of the state agencies, that might be, one way to connect the dots.
Well, thanks to Angela, I mean, we're aware now that there will be an EJ session on the first morning of the Water Quality Coordinating Committee in just a few weeks, and I'll carry it forward there, and let's see what ideas come out of it. And
next week.
Pardon me?
It's next week.
Yeah, right. I will be there.
I don't want you to not come next week and show up the following week because we won't be there.
It's on my calendar on the right time. I'm just, blue skying right now. But point is, that's a good way to start that dialogue to get it into a broader context because we don't need to try to invent something that is already there to use. But I think asking the questions and then bringing the right people into that dialogue is what I'm talking about. So. And we have that opportunity in front of us now with new EJ partners and a new statewide effort focused on it.
Something to be aware of, maybe fatefully and coincidentally. Oh, I want Dr. Wolf to hear too. It's in direct response to your comment. Sorry. The Assistant Deputy Director of the Drinking Water Division was formerly, just 3 weeks, 4 or 5 weeks ago, the head of the Office of Information and Management Assessment at the State Board. So she's Karen Worcester's equivalent. Her name's Karen as well, Karen Larson. So because of her data, partly appointed because of her data connection to the data and the way our agency uses the data. So there's not a direct opportunity there about the data.
All right. So thank you very much. I think this was very informative. And it is now noon, so this would be a perfect time for, first I should ask, you know, you're done with the presentation. I apologize. I should have asked that first.
Can we have a copy of the PowerPoint? Can you put a link up for us?
Yes.
That'd be great, because there is a lot there and be helpful. We're preparing for the WQCC.
So
I just want, the slide presentation I want to remind you that we do have, the resolution hasn't been so good, but we do have a new projector, parts of it are here. So hopefully by November, we will have a brand new projector that's more suitable. This is was a temporary replacement after the other one died after 12 years of.
I was silently grumbling and thought, next time I bring my own projector.
Hopefully we'll have a new one installed for you next board meeting.
All right. So thank you very much. So we will now take a lunch break and reconvene at 1 o'clock, at which time we will cover the topic of our strategic plan. Nope, we're done. No closed session.